Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to another exciting adventure here on Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick. Am I also intellectual and right hand and God saver? Cool Mike. Good afternoon, Mikey.
Good afternoon, Annie. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Conservative Prime Time. Southern Sense, check that. For Tuesday, the 26th of March.
Boy, was that our Freudian slip.
Very, very excited. Well, I'm very excited to get the update today from Melanie, who is Corey's mom. As you know, we had her on before. And as always, we are a veteran-friendly show, and this is big news. For those who follow us on Facebook, they can see I tagged a mass amount of Congress people and radio talk show people.
So. Fantastic, fantastic. And we're also going to have not only Corey's mother, but we also have his attorney on air. And just before we went on air, I had the privilege of speaking with his doctor, and he gave me a lot of information that we'll be sharing with that too. So I want to welcome everyone on the show.
You talked to Corey's doctor?
Yeah. Dr. Carl Horvath. He's a colonel in the Army. Yes. So he could not be with us because he is on duty in the ER. He said the Army's not too happy with him, but we'll discuss all of that as we get into the show. Want to remind everyone that September 14th, we're going to have back here in Beaufort, South Carolina, the Lieutenant Dan Week number 4. That concert will be with the Lieutenant Dan Band, led by Gary Sinise, you know, the lead actor in CSI New York. He was also Lieutenant Dan in Forrest Gump, hence the name of the band. And we'll have a rocking good time the week of September 14th. Anyone interested, go to ldw4.com or go to independencefund.org. This is a fund that helps veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan, and it helps them from where the government leaves off, we take it over. So take it, check it out. Even if it's a dollar, make a donation. So that said,
such a great cause. And
yeah, and
such a great cause. I mean,
yeah, it is. And I spoke to Robert D. Travell, who's been a guest on the show, and he's on the board with the Independence Fund, and we're all excited. The venue is once again back in the Waterfront Park here. They thought for a while they weren't going to be able to use the park because of the fees the city was charging, but they managed to work that out, so they will be back here. So, Mike, make sure you mark your calendar. Get yourself down here.
Well, I will do my best to ask Jermaine and Sarge to try to get down here as well. That would be great to be able to do shows live. I certainly hope to. That's a real difficult time of year for me, especially since we'll have a game that night. But who knows? I just love that cause we got involved in. I mean, when we had our guests on there, and obviously we are a veteran-oriented show, just the positiveness of those veterans. I could not see them, but you could. I mean, you would never guess that these people are physically disabled or in wheelchairs or they don't have legs. They're, like, cracking up jokes and to myself, like, this is they really show us how to appreciate life 100% when we wish we could appreciate it half of that.
Exactly. Well, it's always an honor to do that with the Independence Fund for these veterans.
Hmm. Yep. And are we going to have the same guys back on before the pre?
I don't know. I haven't gotten the complete schedule yet. As soon as I get the schedule, I'll put it out there, and I'll share links with it up on our Southern Sense. And reminding everyone, we do have a new website. And matter of fact, if you go to our show homepage, just click on Rebel Mouse. It'll be the first link up underneath our show description, and it's all of our sites in one spot. It is our southernsense.webs.com. It is the Blog Talk Radio site, and it's also got other interesting links. You can also catch me up on Facebook and Twitter. All those links are in one spot on Rebel Mouse, so check it out.
Yep. We go into our show dedication, I just definitely want to mention we have Melanie in our chat room, who is Corey's mother, and it says Master Guns MCRD. I would assume that is somebody we'd like to also welcome. And I just want to say to Melanie before we read our dedication, you are an awesome mom. I mean, just reading since the last time we had her on, I mean, she obviously is in this crusade, and leading up to now, she hasn't stopped. That is one hell of a lady to have for a mother. I mean, fighting for her son like that is amazing.
Absolutely. And she's a strong woman in will, although she's physically healthy. So our prayers go out to her for that, as well as for Corey. And we'll go into our dedication now. Everyone that listens to the show knows that every show starts off with a dedication to a fallen hero. And this one is to Private First Class Matthew J. England, who was killed June 8th, 2011. So, Mike, are you at the computer? Can you pull up the Army mix?
I am. The Army mix, okay.
All right. The best tribute I could find were not my words. These are the words of his mother. And she writes in the Iraq-Afghanistan War Heroes page, "This is a tribute to my son, Matthew Joseph England, who was killed in action in An-Najaf province, Iraq, when enemy force attacked his unit with an improvised explosive device. He was assigned to the 3rd Squadron, 3rd Army Cavalry Regiment out of Fort Hood, Texas. Matthew was an Ozark Mountain boy, raised in the rural southern Missouri area near the Gainesville by me, his mother, and his stepfather. Matthew's extended family includes his natural father, paternal grandfather, aunts and uncles in Tennessee. Matthew had set some lofty goals for his future. His dream job had always been to someday fly military aircraft. It did not matter what type of aircraft, as long as he could pilot something. He had hoped his commanding officers would someday see fit to nominate him for Warrant Officer Flight School. If that was not to be, Matthew's backup plan was equally ambitious. He would remain serving in the military until graduating from college in hopes
that a college degree coupled with his experience as a veteran soldier would be enough to entice the CIA into allowing him a shot at joining their coveted ranks. Didn't necessarily have to be as a covert agent. A position sitting in a cubicle in front of a computer analyzing data would have been just fine. He was a whiz at computers. But his life was far from being all serious. When home in the Ozarks, Matthew enjoyed the lakes in the summertime, especially when getting a thrill by jumping from the tops of the bluff, young person craziness. In the colder months, he fervently wished for snow to fall deep enough to allow him to break out a snowboard. While stationed at Fort Hood, where there was little chance of going snowboarding, he substituted his snowboard with a skateboard and quickly came to enjoy that sport. The big adventure he was waiting anxiously to do after his tour was to learn to skydive. He spent the past year trying to entice his stepdad, a former Army paratrooper, into returning to the skies to take lessons. Matthew loved music of all kinds, especially classic rock, and was a fan of the movies. Matthew was a muscle car enthusiast. He owned two Camaros, a 1984 Z28 given to him on his 16th birthday by his stepdad and me, and a 1993 Z28 he bought on his own. He was saving his money to buy a brand new Dodge Challenger. Matthew England was a proud, dedicated soldier who was intelligent, witty, and driven. He was a good friend to those deserving. He especially cherished the bond developed between those fellow soldiers with whom he served side by side. These young fighting men, many of them whom I know personally, are true friends, evident by the genuine posts on Matthew's Facebook page and their heartfelt correspondences with me. My husband's a former soldier, and he mentioned so many times the camaraderie that exists between soldiers. I know now truly understand. I think back over the life I spent with Matthew. It went by so quickly, yet was filled with so many wondrous things. I could write forever about him in this dedication, but I will end with this. Private First Class Matthew Joseph England was my loving son, and to me, he was simply awesome. Pamela Hengen, proud mother of Private First Class Matthew J. England. And to Matthew and all the brave men out there that are serving and have served, we dedicate this song to them. My Name is America by Todd L. Hamilton.
I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be. Others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour, because my name is America. I stand proud and free. My name is America. Don't tread on me. I cannot be broken. I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up from the flames, and I'll always stand proud and free. I'm America, don't tread on me. America is my name. For those who need me, I'll always be here. For those who will harm me, I'll face without fear. But I'll always stand proud and free. I'm America, don't tread on me. I'm America.
That's Todd Allen Herndon. You can download his song for free from his website. The song is My Name is America. Today's show is about Corey Claggett. And, Mike, we have his mother, Melanie, in the chat room. She'll be calling in shortly. We also have his attorney on the line with us. So good afternoon, Tim Parlatori. How are you doing?
Good. Good afternoon.
All right. Now, I don't know if a lot of people out there understand the story of Corey. Can you give us a brief synopsis?
Sure. In a nutshell, this was a case where back in 2006, he was deployed with the 101st Airborne Division, and they were sent into this village, and they were told the village is 100% Al-Qaeda, there are no civilians, kill every military-age male that you find there. He and his squad went in. They found, when they were clearing house to house, they went in one building and found three males inside using women as human shields. Rather than shooting them, they did take them prisoner. The squad leader called it in, and he was told by the higher-ups, what do you mean you took three detainees? Why aren't they dead yet? The squad leader called the squad together and said, okay, the command wants these guys dead. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to cut them loose. And then he ordered the two youngest, most junior members of the squad to open fire, Corey being the youngest and most junior. So he did follow that order. Afterwards, the incident was investigated. They were arrested, and he is currently serving an 18-year sentence in Fort Leavenworth for three counts of murder.
All right, now, two other people were arrested with him. One was his squad sergeant, and the other one was the other young soldier that was ordered to fire.
Now, there were three others.
Oh, three others.
Yes, there was the two that you mentioned, and then the third was another member of the squad who, two of the guys died immediately. One was still alive. The medic checked him out and said, guy's not going to make it. So the squad leader ordered a third soldier to shoot that third individual. But he got off with, I think, 6 months and then restoration to full duty.
And that was Graber?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure I got the names all correct. All right. Now, the command came through from the CO, who at the time was Colonel Michael Steele. And all he got was just a reprimand for issuing such an order. Why was that?
Well, that's kind of a muddy area, because where the command actually came from is in question. There was never an official finding that I'm aware of that was Colonel Steele that gave that order. That was something that the Corey's first attorney, Paul Berggren, was attempting to run down, and really the way that he was doing that, he made a lot of accusations against Colonel Steele without having any real hard evidence, and so that is not something that I'm going to be really saying that it came from Colonel Steele, because without any evidence, I can't do that.
All right. Now, how did you get involved in the case? Because as you said, he did have an attorney prior, but didn't he also have a military attorney prior to going into trial?
He, prior to coming to me, he's actually had at least three different attorneys. The first attorney he had, who I mentioned, Paul Berggren, he was a civilian defense counsel who volunteered to represent him at the trial stage. He was also assigned a military lawyer at that time. And Paul Berggren, he was arrested just prior to Corey's trial, initially charged with running a house of prostitution, and then later hit with a whole bunch of other charges. And just last week, Paul Berggren was found guilty after trial of 23 counts, including racketeering, narcotics distribution, and multiple counts of murder.
Whoa. And you want that for your defense attorney. But
yeah.
And
one of the problems, and why I go back to, you know, when you bring up the Colonel Steele issue, you know, to this day, he's now saying, you know, in his own defense, he's trying to say that this was all trumped up by the government because of all the work that he did for Corey Claggett and the Abu Ghraib soldiers. And basically he's claiming that this whole case was brought about because he was very close to being able to prove that the order to kill all military-age males did not come from Colonel Steele, but rather came directly from President Bush. So... therefore,
okay.
anything that really came out of that era of Corey's defense, I can't really stand behind with any credibility.
All right. Well, there was a big problem with Corey when he went into the military court, and his military lawyer, as I understand it, told him to plead not guilty, because if he didn't plead not guilty and went forward with the trial, then he would be facing the death penalty or life in prison without parole. He was placed between a rock and a hard place. They said they will go to trial today. Is that as I understand it?
Not quite. There was a, when Berggren was arrested, they did offer Corey a deal for the 18 years. And he did accept that deal based on the premise that they weren't going to give him an adjournment, so the trial was set to start, you know, that next week. He was not going to have the assistance of his civilian lawyer. He was only going to have the assistance of his military counsel, who had never tried a murder case before. And so at that point, decided to plead guilty.
So now here's a young kid. He's got no courtroom experience, shoved into this situation. So how did you get involved?
I got involved because the United American Patriots, which is an organization that raises money to help provide a defense to these soldiers who are accused of committing the crimes in the combat zone, they became involved in the case, and then that's when I, in my discussions with Major Bill Donahue, who runs the organization, he introduced me to Corey's mother, and that's how I became involved.
You're doing a fantastic job from what I'm seeing. You had a video up from his first clemency hearing. Unfortunately, the second phase of the video wasn't loading, but I was watching it, and I was enthralled. You know, what went wrong with that first clemency hearing?
Well, a lot, unfortunately. We brought out all the arguments, but the Army at that time, I don't think, was in a position where they were politically inclined to release him. And so, you know what? Unfortunately, I'm actually getting a call on the other line from Corey. Can I call you back later?
Absolutely, and give him our regards.
Will do.
All right, that's Tim Parlatore. He is Corey Clagg's attorney, and we should have his mother calling in a split second. She is in the chat room, so Melanie, pick up the phone and dial us in here. It's a tragedy, this whole thing. When I had mentioned that there was an order to kill that came up from high up, at his trial, there was Lieutenant Justin Wurheim, and this is his testimony, quote, "We're going to hit the ground shooting and kill all the Al-Qaeda and Iraqi insurgents," he testified. We are to positively identify and kill any military-age male on the island." This is from a lieutenant. Now, you've got a private first class. He's green behind the ears. He ends up joining the Army. 3 months after the Army, he joins. He's sent to Iraq. 8 months later, he is now placed in this situation, and you've got someone up on high saying, "Go ahead and shoot. You're a private. What are you supposed to do?" Just what are you supposed to do? What would you do in that situation? You obey
exactly
a direct order?
Exactly what he did.
Yeah. And we do have Melanie on the line with us. Good afternoon, Melanie. Melanie, can you hear us?
Oh, hello. Hey, Annie. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, great. You know, Tim said that Corey was on the other line as he was hanging up with us, so hopefully he'll be able to join us before we get off the air at 3:30.
Okay,
so
great.
Melanie, introduce yourself and tell us about Corey, as you know him as your son.
Well, I'm Corey's mom. I don't think Corey would have been known or his story if it wasn't for the efforts of trying to get someone to say something was wrong in Corey's case. We did not have the money. We did not know military law. Corey took this plea deal. We felt that he was forced to take this plea deal, no matter how you look at it. He wouldn't have had representation. So I felt that it was wrong, and just started pleading all over the internet and television and whatever I could do to get someone to hear this case that something wasn't right.
Now, you have a website up for him, which is CoreyClaggett.com, and on there you've got the whole story, and you tell some very heart-wrenching things about Corey's state of mind and what he's been going through.
Well, I mean, I sound great today, and I feel great today, and I'm in a better place as far as my spirituality, and the way that I feel is what's happening. But there was a time I thought I was going to die. There was a time I thought my son was going to die, because this was so heart-wrenching. I cannot describe how this feels when this happens to your child. How it just tears your world upside down. It was a domino effect with our family. And trying to get someone to listen to this case, this was not a civilian case, and it's a lot different than the way the civilian world works in our courts. So we didn't have access easily to get information about what was happening to our son. We didn't know which way to go, so we were left in the dark, and that is worse than anything when you have someone just locked away and you don't know how to reach them, you don't know how to get word to them, you can't just go and visit, and you didn't have an attorney right away, and it just, like I said, it was heart-wrenching. Boy, I'm getting all worked up, I'm sorry, but this, I don't know how to tell you. This is different when this happens, when you're accused of a war crime, when you are accused of defying the military, if that's what you want to call it, not following orders, following orders. He wasn't at home, and it was a hit and run. It was drunk driving. It was just an assault. He got in a fight with a buddy or anything like that where he deserved to be punished. In this case, he was following orders. He was doing his job. He was doing what he was trained. He was, in my opinion, somewhat brainwashed. That's what they do when they're young, and they tell you that you listen to them and nothing else matters. You don't listen to anyone else. You follow orders. You stick with your brothers, and that's the way it is.
Yeah. Now, I was talking to Dr. Horvath earlier.
Great.
Just before coming on the air. Very, very lovely man. And I
told
him I would love
to
meet him in person.
Oh, yeah.
And he said something interesting, which I was unaware of. Now, I had been married. My ex-husband was a Marine, and I'm accustomed to the military culture. But I wasn't aware of this. And he said that an enlisted guy like Corey, he gets one type of oath, where an officer swears a different one. And the difference in the oaths, they are basically word for word exactly alike, with the exception that the enlisted soldier swears an oath to obey a direct order. An officer doesn't.
So I didn't know that.
I was completely unaware of that also. So he's saying that's also a mitigating circumstance as to why Corey was forced to obey an order that he felt may have been unlawful.
Well, Annie, you know, a lot of people tell me, people in the military, people that are serving, people that have gotten out, they're, you can go either way with believing Corey if he did right or wrong, but this is the way it is. Corey left home. He joined the service. He left home. Now, he hasn't been much anywhere away from home, so he's feeling independent. He's loving the military. Oh, my goodness. He did love the military so much so. And I've said this many times, he didn't want to take off that uniform. He was proud. He stood tall in that uniform. He was going to do his time and get out. He was going to earn money for college and get out. But then when he was going through training, he says, Mom, I think I'm going to go as far as I can. He loved the way that it made him feel, not just he was proud of what it meant and what he was supposed to be doing over there. Now, when you have somebody that is young, and I wouldn't say he was real impressionable, but when he is drilled and they go through training the way they do, like I said, you are to listen to us. He used to joke with me. He says, Mom, I can't listen to you anymore. I can't. And I said, well, what are you talking about? And he says, well, I was told that the Army is my mother and my father. And I said, well, I don't care what they said. You will listen to me. You will respect what I say. And so he was doing it jokingly all, but that was the mindset that they gave him. So you put somebody at his age, first tour over there in another country, in the middle of nowhere, and then you put him in that situation. What is he going to do? Because all he hears are those orders, and they were given by several people. You don't know if he didn't follow those orders. He may not have come back home. He could have been in a box, whether it's friendly fire, a grenade falls short, or he could have been locked up for not following orders. Which way was he going to go at that age, first tour, the lowest ranking in this unit, and this wasn't even his original unit. This wasn't people that he was used to going out on missions with and touring with. So what choice are you going to make?
Yeah, he was switched between units because he was having problems with the new commanding officer in his squad that transferred in. And he was specifically brought over to this unit to help him adjust better. And that's the ironic part, is that the sergeant that was trying to help him was also the one that gave him the direct order at that point to uncuff them and to shoot them.
I don't know now in hindsight if that officer was trying to help him or if he was just trying to lead him in the way that you know, he was the boss. That's how I look at it. You know, you follow me, I'll joke with you and buddy with you, but when it comes down to it, when he wanted something done, okay, now Corey's the one, you know, that he used to do this. Because they could have called a couple of other people over to do that, to do what he wanted. you know?
Yeah.
But I don't blame that sergeant. I don't blame Hunsaker anymore because they were given orders. Even Corey's squad leader heard that from someone else. So it went down the rank. And when you've got something as much as a sergeant on another line, when they call in and say, hey, we've got two detainees here, we need a Black Hawk and that sergeant. Now, this is on the record, and that sergeant says, what, they're not dead yet? Now, that's on Corey's court record. You know, this has been said several times. When they keep hearing that, what are you going to do? Nobody wants this person, these people back. You know, so Corey was just caught between a rock and a hard place, no matter how you look at it. And unfortunately, as smart as my son is, as brilliant as he is, at that time, in that setting, did not make the right decision. I don't know if there was another decision he could have made, but this is where he's at now.
Yeah, and Dr. Horvath was explaining, and in some ways I could relate to it because having been in the police department in New York, I understand when you're in with a group like this, there's a certain mentality, there's a certain mindset. You're in a world that the civilian cannot understand.
Right.
But we can now take it even further than that, that when you are a soldier and you're over there in Afghanistan or Iraq or any of these places that we send our young men and women in, it's a whole different culture, one that a civilian has no mind concept of. These men and women leave as one person. When they come back home, they are a completely different person. And they get over there, especially in Iraq, in this specific area that Corey was sent, which was Tharthar, it's hot, it's dirty, it's mm-hmm. dangerous. You're under stress 24/7,
yes.
day after day, night after night. You're under pressure to perform. And in this instance, each unit had what they had, a bulletin board with a kill tally on it. And at that point, Corey had been there for 8 months without a single kill, and he was getting a lot of pressure.
Well, he's been in firefights, and he told me he's never known if he's actually killed anybody. I think this incident really disturbed Corey. I hope people don't think, okay, he went over there and he shot and he's okay with that. This truly disturbed Corey. There is enough people who interviewed Corey, the psychologist, while he was being even detained, and people giving testimony. This really bothered Corey. He had nightmares. He was asking questions. Is this how you feel when you see somebody being killed? You know, this truly bothered him. And when you talk about a civilian world to the military world, Corey would never have acted in that way if he were home. Just like he told me, he was in the middle of nowhere. He couldn't walk away if he wanted to. Even when he walked away during part of his squad leader speaking about what was going to happen, I was like, Corey, why didn't you walk away instantly? He's like, Mom, you never know what stories are true over there. That, you know, like I said, he didn't know these guys a whole lot. He said they speak about all kinds of stuff, you know. He didn't believe half of what they were saying. But he could walk away here if he didn't like something. He'd walk away and come home. He couldn't do that over there. And no matter what morals he was taught here and manners and what he knows to be true in his heart, like you said, that's out the window over there because it is a totally different mindset, environment, and again, you were trained over and over and over, this is what you do, and you follow your superiors, and total different situation. And if it hadn't been for Colonel Horvath, it took Colonel Horvath a couple of years for Corey to warm up to him because when this happened, Corey didn't trust anybody. Nobody. And Colonel Horvath has really worked wonders with my son. And I don't know if Tim was able to tell you, he will be attending the hearing coming up next week. So,
yeah, I wanted to mention that, that he does have a clemency hearing this, not this Thursday, next Thursday on the 4th. And on the website, CoreyClaggett.com, if you look at the left-hand menu, there is a link on how to write the clemency letters, asking for clemency, and you have the address and everything on there. You send one letter to the Army Clemency and Parole Board and a copy of that to the attorney, Tim Parlatore, and his address is also up there on Madison Avenue, New York City. You can also write directly to Corey, and that address is also on that website, how to write letters to Corey, send him cards or whatever. Please check out the website, CoreyClaggett.com. My clemency letters went out this morning, I'll tell you honestly.
Well, a lot of people are still just hearing about Corey's case. I mean, it's unbelievable, but I guess, you know, this doesn't spread as fast as we like, but a lot of people are just hearing about this. And at that clemency hearing, that is a clemency and a parole hearing, so they can decide either or both, you know, during this hearing. He can be released on parole, or they can give him clemency. So either one can go. And did Tim let you know that I think as of this week, everybody involved in this situation has been released now?
Yeah, I was going to also mention that. There's so much to discuss on this. The sergeant who gave the order, the staff sergeant, he was sentenced. Where's my notes? I'm looking at them, and I've got so much. I've got pages here.
I believe he got 10 years.
And he only served three and was paroled after three. Hunsucker has just recently been paroled and released, and as I understand, you were telling me that he's already been accepted to college. Nothing happened to Colonel Steele, just a little slap in the wrist, a little letter in his file.
Right.
But out of all of them, Corey got the harshest sentence.
Well, Hunsucker got the same sentence as Corey did. But if you knew Corey when this happened and he was incarcerated and sentenced, Corey didn't go down without a fight, I'm telling you, because, first of all, he did not want to plead guilty to this. Second of all, he was being whisked away and put in a situation that he has never been in his life. So, and being cut off from his family, we are very close. And to be cut off weeks at a time like we were in the beginning, you know, Corey didn't have a shower for 8 days at one time. And if he was on medication and it was ordered that he be fed 4 times a day because of the medication. Well, if they didn't want to feed him, they didn't feed him. You know, they certainly didn't want to feed him 4 times a day. And he would get sick from this medication. They have switched his medication several times. And if you know about medication, when you're taken off and put on something right away and don't have time for that, that can cause situations with your mood and so forth. So Corey was going, and we didn't know that Corey was suffering from the post-traumatic stress. I didn't know Corey was suffering from ADHD. He was diagnosed with that while serving. So you put all of these factors together, and then you lock him away in solitary confinement. From the very beginning, he was not in general population when he got there. He was never given the chance. So you put him behind four walls, shut the door, and locked the key, and he had no communication with us for several weeks. It might have even been 2 months before we finally first spoke. You're going to have some rage going on there. And so he did not take being locked up lightly. And we were still speaking out. And I think Corey was treated awful before he got to Leavenworth. And we had proven some of that, and some people spoke up about that. So he had all of this going on when he got to Leavenworth, and he didn't trust anybody. He didn't want to talk to anybody. He didn't want to listen to their rules. He didn't want nobody coming near him. And it just was a fire brewing. So Corey has come a long way after 6 years, and most of that time was in solitary confinement. He's only been out of solitary confinement not quite a year. So
what a shame. I mean, I almost excuse me. I am so sorry. I mean, for you having to go. I almost don't believe this story. It is so horrible the way we treat a volunteer hero, mm-hmm. defending our freedoms.
There's
just
two books written on this. There's two books about this. A Good Soldier on Trial by Dr. Mestrovic and Rules of Engagement. He was so upset with the military. He had been a war criminal expert and testified at Abu Ghraib and so forth. He lives in Texas. He teaches at the University of Texas. And he was supposed to testify, and the military brought him in hoping that he had something negative to say about Corey's situation, but he didn't. So they never called him in. Well, they didn't let us know that he could have said something good about Corey. So we never got to use him as a witness either. But he was so upset at the way this was handled, he went and wrote two books about it. And he uncovered a lot that happened with Corey's case, the shredding of evidence, the CID officers lying to soldiers and getting them to give false testimony against Corey, which the attorney used against us. The prosecutor was telling us that there was all these witnesses against Corey, that he did do it. You definitely got to say you did it because we have all these witnesses. Well, they didn't have any witnesses, but they made us believe that, even though Corey kept denying, no, you don't. But there was a lot that was done to Corey. Even when he slept, he was handcuffed and shackled. And I almost couldn't believe it. I'm like, Corey, when he got a call out to me and told me, because his wrists were getting red and raw and his legs, and I said, are you sure even when you're in the cell that they keep you like that? And he said, yes. Well, I was having a hard time believing that they would treat him that way. When he showered, he had to wear those. Now, how are you going to bathe yourself when you're handcuffed and shackled? But he had to wear those in the shower. Well, this stuff came out. I mean, some guards came forward. I was sent some photos of them being handcuffed. So it's unbelievable that all this stuff happened, but it did happen. And it does happen. And there's still things that are happening. But in the military world, you don't hear it because people don't speak out as much. Until Corey's case happened, you didn't hear families speaking up about the situation, what was going on. Every chance I got, I was on television. I was on the radio. I was saying, look, if we don't stand behind our guys, our family, our brothers, our sisters, our mothers, our fathers, who's going to stand up for them? Because the military is so hush-hush, when they're put in that prison, that's it. You don't hear about them. You can't just walk in there and visit like you do in a civilian prison. They even told us we better keep our mouths shut, but Corey begged me, Mom, I don't care what happens to me, please don't stop. No matter how he felt, if they were retaliating against him to keep him to shut up, whatever the reason was, Corey was singled out and treated worse than anybody involved.
Yeah, when you were on the show the last time, that was when we had Rick Ott on. It's the first time I heard about Corey. And then over the time, you and I have been communicating on Facebook, and the more I dug into it and the more I read, the more I just found it flabbergasting that this young man has to have gone through everything he has. From the moment he was arrested, he has been treated in such a horrific manner that we do not even treat our terrorists in this manner.
Well, if somebody was bringing your dinner and they're right in front of you ready to hand you your tray of food and they decide, okay, we're going to mix all this up. And by the way, let me just take a drink and dump it on there and let me give it a good stir. Would you eat that? They did that to Corey.
And he was handcuffed.
He was a pig in a pen, giving him hog slop and expect him to eat that. He went on a hunger strike for 7 days because he wasn't going to eat what they were doing, but it's his word against their word, And every time I said something on television, I took a photo to a news station in Tennessee when I was traveling to see Corey. I stopped in Tennessee, and this news station came to interview me, and I gave them this photo of Corey handcuffed with Hunsaker and Gerard, and I'm telling you, not 5 minutes after they put that photo on television, the military called the TV station and told them they could not air that photograph. And the TV station said, yes, we can. It's a private photo. because that was sent to us by a guard.
And that's the same photo that I have up on the show page.
Yes, it is. It is. And so the military was watching. And, you know, it's this stuff really did happen. And if you heard any of the radio shows that I've done that was archived in the beginning till now, I couldn't do a show without crying. I mean, my heart felt like it was ripped out, begging and pleading for people to hear this case, get involved, you know, don't just listen to me, talk to the attorney, dig the facts, you know. And even if he did, even if you don't agree with what he did, he could, what good is it to give him a bunch of medals or ribbons for good deeds and not even hear the good deeds that he did over there? Like there was a car that blew up and Corey called me because he was so happy for himself. And I said, Corey, what is it? And he says he had got back from a mission, but on that mission they had a roadside bombing. It wasn't their vehicle. It was one of the Iraqi vehicles that got blown up. And there was an older man and woman in that vehicle. Well, the woman was dead, Corey said, but the man was still alive, but he had lost a limb. I can't remember if it was his leg or his arm, but Corey bandaged it and tried to stop the bleeding to save the man. You don't hear that in the news reports. Corey didn't hate the Iraqi people. He didn't want to go up there and blow up and kill everybody. He just wanted to do his job, and he said in the courtroom when he wrote his letter to the judge, in that letter he stated, I hope the Iraqi children get the freedom they deserve. That is not a cold-blooded killer saying those words.
No, it's not.
He's a decent human being, and he deserves a second chance.
Yeah, and he's been given a harsher treatment for very simply having a superior officer tell him, you must do this. Now, that sergeant not only told him he must do that, he had them and told them, instructed them exactly what to do to go back and stage the scene to make it look like, you know, they were attacked.
Right.
The sergeant, in so much, even went and cut Hunsucker's face and sucker punched Corey to make it look like the two of them had been attacked by the Iraqis.
They and you know why he sucker punched Corey? And why it's called a sucker punch? Because Corey didn't know it was coming. Because by the time Gerard did what he did, they knew he better not cut Corey, because during their talk, and if you look at my son and his photos, he's a nice-looking guy, he cares about his appearance. They knew they better not damage him, but Corey would not have let them do that, and that's why it's a sucker punch. And they don't tell you in the reports how Corey chased Gerard after he hit him, because Corey was going to bust his tail. And I said, why were you going to do that, Corey? Because he just realized what situation he got put in. But Corey was told to say all these different stories when this happened. He was told to keep his mouth shut. He was threatened if he said anything about what really happened or what orders were given. So, and then he was locked up with people who threatened him. So, of course, he's not going to say anything when he doesn't have the chance to. But, yes, that's true. There were so many stories given. He was even told by his attorney. He was just railroaded from the very beginning in which direction to go until it all became a mess.
Now, he even went in so far as to cooperate with the government prosecution of Gerard.
Yes.
And yet that was not taken into consideration as a mitigating circumstance for his sentence.
Well, I was called in as a witness against Gerard as well because I saw Gerard 6 times. Now, I didn't know Gerard had threatened my son. Corey was telling me, Mom, don't trust Gerard. Mom, don't go see Gerard. I couldn't understand why. Now it makes sense. But in the beginning, I couldn't understand why. They had moved Gerard to our Navy Weapons Station base here. So Gerard was 15 minutes from me while they moved my son, you know, 1,000 miles away. And so Gerard was here. I was able to get in and go see Gerard 6 times before they discovered who I actually was and stopped me from going. But I had to see Gerard face-to-face and say, what happened? What's going on? And I got to tell you, I had an actor in front of me, and Corey kept warning me, don't do this, don't go to him, not knowing that Gerard was fishing for for stuff from me. Like, for instance, Gerard would tell me, we need to keep our mouth shut. When you talk to Corey, make sure he keeps his mouth shut. And I didn't understand why he was so strong on that at first, but now I know, because Gerard was telling Corey, you better keep his mouth shut. You don't say nothing, blah, blah, blah. And Corey was afraid. But in hindsight, I see that. But I was supposed to testify at Gerard's trial, too, with everything that we talked about. And then I wasn't called as a witness when I was there. They had 75 people there to testify for Gerard, and they probably didn't call but a handful out of all those people. I don't understand why. I don't understand the sentence he got. And I don't know if Tim told you now, but even after Gerard got out, even after 3 years, his sentence was reversed.
Reversed? What do you mean?
It was dropped. And Tim told me that it was just based, it wasn't because he wasn't guilty. It was because there was some kind of technicality with his case, and it was dropped. So Tim was supposed to be bringing that up at the clemency or parole hearing. He might even did it last year. If you find him not guilty, how can Corey and Hunsaker still be guilty if you're dropping Gerard's case and basically saying he didn't give those orders? You know, it's complicated. There's so much in this case, it's unreal. But we hope this is Corey's year this year. And I don't see how they couldn't let him out, considering everyone is out. Corey has done nothing greater than anyone else that's involved, and we are praying.
When next week, will you go? Walk us through the procedures. This is going to be in a courtroom. It's going to be in a separate room with a judge. What exactly is taking place?
Okay, how it works, I'm not able to attend this year. I could, but, I mean, three people are allowed to go on Corey's behalf. This year I'm not able to go. I'm still recovering from heart surgery, and so I'm not able to go that distance. But Tim will be there, and Colonel Horvat will be there. Colonel Horvat is also a doctor, and he will be testifying on Corey's behalf as far as his mental state, as far as his communication with Corey over the years, how Corey has changed mentally, how he's still going to need some care when he is out, and hoping that they reverse his dishonorable discharge so that he can go to the VA and still get, because Corey's going to have a lot of recovering to do even when he's out. But there are there's three to five people that can be in the room. It's not a courthouse. It's just a regular building, several stories. You go up the elevator into a regular room. They will be a panel that sits behind a podium. You're sitting at a desk like an attorney would do, and there's a desk like a prosecutor would do. They give you... Only one person is supposed to speak, even though three are allowed. One is supposed to speak on Corey, but they did allow me and Colonel Horvat to speak as well when I was there. But they may ask questions. They may not. Tim will stand up, and he will just start pleading his case, why he feels Corey should be released, what his plans are, Corey's plans for the future, his changes that he's made while being there. And then the panel can ask questions if they want. It is videotaped, and there's no reaction. When I went the first time, I was like, you couldn't get a reaction on them no matter what you did. It just felt like a very cold room. It was just stone face. Cold. No reaction whatsoever. So they don't let on. But the 2 years ago when I went, there was a female on the board, and she did tear up and ask some questions. Well, we thought that meant good news. They had asked several questions, and it seemed unfavorable for Corey, but they came back and denied it still. So you have no idea by their reaction which way they're going to go. There's an attorney on the board, and the rest of them are officers that are on the board. But the whole thing usually lasts about 20 minutes. But the last time I was there, they gave us like 45 minutes. We all three spoke, and it was very emotional. So,
all right, we got Tim back with us, Melanie. Tim, how was Corey?
He's doing okay. He's doing okay. He's just really really anxious for next week to see what's going to happen.
Oh well, he can explain to you how the board is better than me. I'm glad you're back, Tim. Yeah, I know Corey's very nervous. He told me for the first time that he goes, "Mom, I'm really nervous," and I said, "What do you mean?" At first, I didn't know what he meant about being nervous, and he said about the board this year. He said, "I wasn't before." Now he's been anxious and hoping they've come back to with good news for Corey, but he deep down never expected anything good. But this time he's wanting it so bad, and said he's so ready that he's definitely uptight, anxiety over it. So it's got to be his year.
Tim, does Corey get to speak directly to the board?
No, he doesn't. The way that it works is that they first have a board out at Fort Leavenworth where the prisoner gets to talk to a panel of officers at the facility, answer their questions, and then they write up their recommendations, and then that gets forwarded over to Arlington where the main board is. A lot of soldiers, if they don't have the family support or the attorneys, that's pretty much their only opportunity. And the board in Arlington will often just evaluate your application on that report. If you do have the family or attorney who can appear on your behalf, you request a personal board, which is what Corey does. And then you can have up to three people appear. So in Corey's case, it's usually an attorney, me, and then two witnesses, Colonel Horvath, or in the past, Melanie has come. And then they pretty much give all three witnesses, as they call them, the opportunity to address the board, and they'll ask questions if they have any.
Yeah, I was speaking to Colonel Horvath earlier. He had called prior to the show, and he couldn't make it on. And I found it interesting how he got involved in the case, and it was just sort of like by a freak set of coincidences. And, Melanie, it involved your mother-in-law?
Yeah, what happened was we saw Corey over the holidays for 3 months and stayed close to Corey so that we could see him, especially because that was the very beginning, and he was very emotional. And then we had a break where we couldn't see him. I think it was like 2 weeks. So we decided not to drive all the way back to South Carolina from Kentucky since it was only a two-week period. So we decided to drive to Ohio to see John's parents. And while we were there, a radio television came to interview us. And the next day, John's mom was at work and it was when we were leaving again, and she had been crying because it was such an emotional time. And Colonel Horvath walked in. Now, he's working on a book, which won't be finished until he is retired, but he is working. Anyway, he went to this office service place where my mother-in-law works, or his wife did, I'm sorry, to take in some of Colonel Horvath's writings. And she saw my mother-in-law crying and asked what happened. Well, then, of course, Ms. Horvath went back and told her husband. And I believe the next day, Colonel Horvath had to go in and get information himself, and that's how it all started.
Yeah, he happened to have been in Iraq. He's been there 3 times, but at the time of this incident, but he was unaware of it. And he's visited Corey 4 times. He gets a weekly call from Corey, and he sends him books and newspaper. And he said he's come a long way emotionally, but he still has a long way to go. Tim, what can we expect at this point when we get the board, makes their determination, it goes to Arlington, and do they respond within a certain time frame, or they can just take their time to make a determination?
The determination is reached fairly quickly. Pretty much within 5 minutes of us walking out of the door, the decision will have been made. There's five members of the panel who vote, and then, you know, 9 times out of 10, that vote is what the final answer is. It does get forwarded on, just to be approved to the Undersecretary of the Army. Usually just, kind of rubber stamps what's already been signed. Sometimes does overturn it. But that's the next step in the process. And then once it's there, depending on what the answer is, if he's going to be released, then it can take a couple of weeks for them to contact the probation department and set up everything as to where he's going to be going, who he's going to be supervised by, all that kind of stuff. And then if it's a denial, sometimes it comes out, the very next day. And sometimes if it's a denial, it still takes a few weeks. So it could be anywhere from the very next day to a couple of a few weeks later.
All right. Now, he got such a harsh sentence of 18 years. Would you ever see something like that happen on the civilian side?
Well, on the civilian side, see, my primary area of practice is in civilian criminal defense, and you wouldn't see that kind of sentence, but then again, it's such a unique case that wouldn't even exist on the civilian side. Because I mean the combat related, killing it, those cases you almost never see them in the U.S. district courts. So it's certainly somebody who is convicted of murder, but then accepts responsibility and testifies for the government again, to assist them in prosecuting the person who's more guilty. In this case, part of his plea deal was that he had to testify in the trial of his squad leader, who gave the orders, and that, the U.S. Sentencing Commission statistics show that the average sentence is about 5 years on something like that, whereas he has 18.
And he's already served more than five. How long
has any of the? Go ahead, Annie.
I was just wondering how long he was sentenced. When?
That was in 2006.
2006. So this has been going on 7 long years.
Yeah.
And the longest anyone actually served was 3.
What do you mean the longest anyone actually served?
The 4 of them.
Oh, no. His co-defendant, William Hunsaker, was only released about a week ago.
All right. So he did a full set all set.
Yeah.
All right. Mike?
This is for either or party. Have any congressmen, senators, or anybody from the political end stepped up on Corey's behalf, with a baseball bat to be the leadoff hitter on this?
No. In fact, several have been contacted, and all of them have passed on it. The only elected official who really showed any interest in this was Alan West. Alan West did. We did meet with him, and he said that he was going to support Corey and support his petition while he was campaigning, and then after he was elected and he was in office, he then did not actually support the petition. So
I have gotten several letters from our senators here in South Carolina, Graham and Lindsey Graham and
DeMint.
Yeah, DeMint. and their letter stated that they could not get involved. And then we wrote back and said they could get involved. There is no statute, and there is no law stating that they can at least write a letter on his behalf, and they still refuse. So it's been nothing. It's a dead end. They don't want to get involved in this.
If I could clarify that, there are ethical rules of Congress and the Senate that say that they're not supposed to get involved in any pending judicial proceedings.
Right.
Because it's the whole separation of powers between the Congress and the judiciary. But the thing is that in this case, all of the appeals have been exhausted, so it's no longer a court case.
Right.
Well, but also, I'm not sure what kind of ethics and morals are on paper in the Senate or in Congress, but they sure as hell never seem to follow them for the past 35 years. That's just a disgrace. That is really a disgrace.
Well, I do want to add
like
that. Go ahead.
Go ahead, no, you go ahead, Melanie.
I wanted to say I will add that out of California, Congressman Bob Filner, he did write a letter 1 year for Corey, and he did donate some of his own money over a radio station that Rick Amato had done. And Rick Amato also got a local, I apologize, I'm not good on politicians, but he was a local, his name was Wilson, who also donated to Corey's defense at the time. But that's been it. The door's been closed.
You mean Joe Wilson?
Yes, Joe Wilson. So out of those two, other than that, no one would even speak about this. I've had a lot of them tell me over a radio show or television, even one called my local station here and said, oh, have her call my office. And they would say things on the air, but then when I did contact, it was like, no, I'm sorry, you know, to be misleading or whatever, no, we can't get involved. So, you know, I've had a lot of doors slammed in my face about this.
That's horrible. And I apologize for that happening. As a citizen, this should never happen. I'm going to throw a question for you, Tim. You're probably not going to be able to answer it. Annie, buckle up your seatbelt. Here goes Cool Mike again. Well, is there any truth to the fact that G.W. Bush, who I can't stand anyways, was behind any of this? I mean, it would seem, as much as I don't care for him, the president? I mean, I doubt he's on the cell phone with somebody saying shoot him, but is there any possible truth to that?
No. No.
I don't think so
either. You just can't figure it. I mean, was he on the telephone with this guy? The sad part is just all kinds of what smoke screens and whatever's get thrown out to save each other's butt, which is very, very sad. From Corey, Corey in my eyes is a hero. And he's a wonderful person. To have a young person like this just torn up at this, it's horrible. And obviously Melanie can speak to what it's done to their family. I mean, this is never a soldier's intention for virtually 100% of the time. I mean, they volunteer to protect me, to protect you, and to protect the Constitution.
Reminding everyone, go to CoreyClaggett.com. There's a link up on the show page. I've been posting it in the chat room. Over in the left-hand column, there's a menu. Go to where it says clemency. You click on it. You can cut and paste any one of those letters. Make sure you mail a copy to Tim over here. His address is on there, as well as to the Army Clemency and Parole Board. And, Tim, I have to apologize. My letters went out to you this morning, but I put three R's in your name. I ended up adding an extra R at the end.
Well, that's – I don't think they'll reject it just based on that.
I wanted to give a shout-out real quick to American United Americans Patriots, because I want to tell how important this is. When this happened to Corey and I was searching for an attorney, well, at first when this happened with Corey, I thought JAG attorney was everything. Okay, Corey, you're getting an attorney. Okay, you know, they're going to represent you. Unbehold, I did not know, you know, did not realize who's signing their paycheck and who they're working for. And the
it's
least
not
amount
like
of
TV
experience.
Show.
Do what?
It's not like the TV show, Jack.
No, it's not. It's not. They're not really. Maybe some of them are. I shouldn't say everybody. But, you know, I thought Corey was covered with a JAG attorney. Then when Paul Berggren got wind of this, I thought, great, this isn't a powerful attorney. You know, I looked him up online, and he had represented somebody from Abu Ghraib, and he had all these stories. And I thought, oh, my God, how could we be so lucky? You know, so I had this attorney. Then that didn't pan out. This attorney got arrested and blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of drama there. But this attorney could no longer represent Corey. So when it was time to really bunch down, and well, even before that, after Paul Berggren said he couldn't represent Corey and Corey had to go ahead and make a decision and put this plea deal in, and I told Corey, I this is not the end, Corey. When my son looked at me and those tears were coming down and they shut those doors on him, I said, this is not over. So when I went searching for an attorney and spent days and hours and all night, I mean, I've done this for years on the Internet trying to find people to help, I couldn't believe no one would talk to me under $100,000 for a retainer. Now, this is a soldier. I felt, my God, it's money or his life. That's what it comes to. I have to pay for his life. We don't have that kind of money. We don't have any of that money. So I started searching for pro bono attorneys. Who would help? Who would listen to this case? Will anybody take this on pro bono? I got nothing. So when Rick Amato finally heard me, and he went on, and he started finding a list of attorneys. Hey, Melanie, check this person out. Check this person. They're saying they'll do it for Rick. You know, I had people all over trying to find attorneys for me that would take a reduced cost. Well, we found one that finally said, okay, $10,000, and I'll go to do the appeal. Like, okay, well, I couldn't raise that money either. Rick Amato raised that money. He had me on the show every week. He dug into this case. He searched out experts. He talked about a video that he saw with Colonel Steele, and he read off all kinds of stuff. He got people to donate. We raised the $10,000. It took a year to do it, but we raised the $10,000. Well, it was to no avail. The appeal was lost. Okay, we got to start all over again. I was at the end of my rope. What do you do when you don't have the funds? You have no way of getting it. We had nothing we could mortgage. We had nothing of a value. We had no way to get the money to represent my son. And another appeal, I'm not right. Does he get two appeals, Tim? I don't remember.
He gets the one to the Army Court of Criminal Appeals and then one to the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces.
Oh, okay, so there was another appeal approaching, and we had no attorney again for that. Because the first attorney that did the appeal, he went back into the military. So he was no longer there to do the other appeal at a reduced cost. So, say the least, I couldn't get an attorney. I was at the end of my rope, and I felt like I let my son down. And there was no hope. My son was going to be locked up behind those prison walls, and that was the last anybody was going to hear. Then United American Patriots, someone contacted them and said, look, here's a guy and here's his story. Please help them. So I was put in touch with them, and Corey, because the communication with him being in that prison was not good at the time and it would take weeks to hear from him and vice versa, I filled out the application to see if they would help my son. Now, his organization, this man founded this organization with his own money, mortgaged his home, because he knew there were soldiers out there like Corey that had no way to defend themselves or the funds. And he built this organization that is nonprofit in all 50 states. He survives on donations, sends out information about Corey, like Corey and his case, and gives information, hoping donations come in so that they can hire so the families can choose the attorneys that they want once this organization has thoroughly checked them out, like they did Tim. Tim notified them, they checked him out, and then put him in contact with me and said, I think, you know, this is a matchup. Without that organization, Corey wouldn't have Tim. Corey wouldn't have anybody when that hearing comes up. I can't travel. Who's there to speak on my son's behalf? Some soldiers never have anybody to go to Arlington to speak on their behalf. We've been there, and they've had hearings, and there's been nobody there to represent them. I feel better knowing Tim is there because I have faith in him. I have faith in Colonel Horvath. We are lucky that we have them. And so I just wanted to give a shout-out to Major Donahue for founding this organization and for Tim putting up with us because it has been one emotional roller coaster, he can tell you, for my son and me. So thank you. I'll tell you,
Melanie, I have the greatest mom in the world, but you are the standard for what a real mother is measured in my book. I mean, you are truly a patriot in my eyes, and although I don't speak on behalf of the country, I know as two very true conservatives, Annie and I apologize for what your son is going through. This is not our intentions as constitutionalists.
It's not easy. I'm not strong like some people think I am. I have my weak moments, and I don't
know
it all.
Nothing is wrong with that. Nothing is wrong with showing emotion. Nothing is wrong with it. Don't feel bad if you cry on this show. I'm literally muted myself about four times.
Well, I'm pretty good at this one. I've cried so hard you couldn't hear me. But I mean,
I also
emotional.
Got my letter came back. I sent a few too many, I guess, promiscuous pictures with there of some of my I promote an energy drink, so I'm going to have to revise the letter a little bit, but I'll get it to him within a week or two. It's too bad we can't send a video, but, well, no, thank you and thank him.
Well, I wanted him to touch note on how Corey's been because, like I said, this has been an emotional roller coaster for Corey. You know, he's had his ups and downs. Tim can touch base on how far he's come. He's had therapists go in there and speak to Corey, and I think he's. Y'all pray that this goes our way because, to be honest with you, I don't want to put no downers on anything. But if this doesn't go in some kind of favor for us, I don't know how we're both going to handle it. But so y'all keep your prayers up. But Tim can tell you more about how the changes that Corey's had and.
All right, Tim, take over.
Yeah, how do I follow that?
I was crying.
His emotional state has been really he's been volatile over the years. When this initially happened, and I apologize, I don't know if you may have covered this while I was gone in the middle, but. When this initially happened, he was put into a Navy brig in Kuwait, where he was really just terribly, terribly mistreated. 24-hour bright lights, chained in the fetal position. They withheld food from him for days. Really horrible stuff. And, you know, that kind of started the downward spiral mentally for him. You know, next is, you know, he was abandoned by his attorney. Everything else, he ends up in Leavenworth in solitary confinement. And he spent a good 5 years in solitary confinement. And, you know, when I first came into this case, one of the first things I did was I hired a forensic psychologist to go out there and analyze him and, you know, find out how hurt he was. And, yeah, there were some very significant, noticeable problems with him, with his abilities to communicate, to control his behavior and everything else. And the problem is that Leavenworth is not really set up to provide the type of treatment that you would need. And you know, one of the big things. That has changed from then until now is just a sense of hope because you know, back then he was in the mindset that, you know, he was going to be there for his full sentence. You know, unlike his mother, he had kind of given up hope of anything getting better. And, you know, once he and I started working together and he started to see that there was daylight, that there was a possibility of getting out, it kind of his whole attitude and his whole psychology changed. And, you know, his disciplinary record, you know, completely cleaned up. He hasn't had a single incident in almost 2 years. He's been having positive write-ups, which are very rare for out there. And
I would say so. That's Leavenworth.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and yeah, even just talking to him on the phone, it's a different person. You know, he's excited. He's got plans. And I think a lot of it was the first couple of years that we were working together. He wanted to get out, but I think he was kind of very guarded and cautious because I don't think he really wanted to get his hopes up too much, because a couple of times when he did and then the board would come back denied, you know, it would put him into a state of depression. But, you know, he really has come a long way, you know, maturity-wise, psychologically. And what's important to note is that he did this all himself. He didn't do it with the assistance of therapy or anything else, because where he is, he has no access to it. And, you know, so really, you know, one of the big things that we're going to be hitting on next week is that he's made all this progress, but at this point, one thing that you need to do is you need to get him out of there, because he needs access to more treatment programs. He needs access to a therapist and things like that. And at the same time, he needs something in his life to give his life meaning, you know, rather than just sitting in a cell for 24/7. And so,
Tim and Melanie, we're down to our last 2 minutes. I wish we had more time, and there's so much we can go over on this. I know I'm going to be following, and Melanie, we're going to be talking and finding out how he makes out in the clemency hearing. And it is going to be with our prayers that everything works out. I want to thank both of you, and I hope that we were able to help with some of the people that were in the chat room and listening in, if they can send some clemency letters, write to Corey, and make a donation on your site, which is CoreyClaggett.com.
Thanks, Annie, for having me on. Thank you, Tim, for making the time. And, you know, maybe we can do more shows with the update, and maybe it'll just get better here on out. Y'all have a good evening.
Thank you, Melanie, and thank you so much, Tim.
Thank both of you very, very much. What an absolute horrible, horrible, horrible story. I mean, it is just absolutely sad.
Yes, and I hope everyone that's listening in the chat room, please go to CoreyClaggett.com, make a donation, send the clemency letters, send Corey a letter, and help the woman and this angel of an attorney. My sister's an attorney, so they're all good attorneys, and I want to thank them for doing what they do. All right, we're going to come back again on Friday, same bat time, same bat station, and we've got some fantastic guests lined up for coming up. It's going to be Carrie Zuras, he's coming back. He was a consultant on the Bush administration. And then after that, we're having another radio host out of California, Bob Siegel. He also writes for NPR. And after that, we have the Thomas Paine of the Internet, Bob Basso. You know all those videos,
wow.
Thomas Paine?
Basso
will be with us, too.
My man, Bob.
So check out our page, which is up on Rebel Mouse and also southernsense.webs.com, and take a look at the calendar. So until then, everyone have a safe and healthy week, and we'll see you back here again on Good Friday. Good night, and God bless.
Good afternoon, everybody.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.